Namaste. So we have these basically two kinds of scriptures, and of course variety are endless, but primarily one which are can rightly be called as Dharma Shastras. So they tell us the do's and don'ts, how we should be, how we should not be, and they also lay a kind of a metaphysical background. So there is the Dharma Shastra and the philosophical basis behind it. And then there are the Yoga Shastras. So Yoga Shastras, that is there in the background, but they teach us how to grow in consciousness towards the divine consciousness. Now in India, Yoga Shastras are also very important. They are the more important part, because the implicit truth behind it is that man can grow into the divine consciousness. And there is a way, if he takes that way, God dwells within us and we can find, discover that God. It's a journey. And for that, there are certain things we have to do, certain attitudes we have to take, certain practices we have to adopt. So though it is true that God is in all, if we try to put it into practice without the true experience of it, it may lead to another kind of chaos and disorder. It has to be done through a progressive discovery. So the Gita, being primarily a Yoga Shastra, mainly its stress is on yoga. We see certain practices which have already been till now revealed to us. The first and foremost practice is Buddhi Yoga. Instead of the mind rushing through the objects of the senses, being engaged all the time with lower goals, lower aims, and outer things, it should turn within, in a discovery of God, in discovery of higher truths, principles of existence, turned inward and upward. And as Shubhendu says, this is important because it sets the mind into a state where it can think rightly. Right thinking, right understanding are the first requisites of any yoga. And that's what yesterday also we were saying, that we have this Buddhi Vinayak, Siddhi Vinayak, Lord Ganesha's festival going on. So Lord Ganesha is the first pujya. You have to worship him first. And it's very nice in stories of Lord Ganesha. We'll see what is interesting about him is that he handles the problems with a kind of Kushagra Buddhi. He is able to rightly discern and give the right guidance that you have to do this, you have to do that. It's not a brute might or force, not like Shiva with his Trishul, he is finishing things. Not like Krishna, who is taking the person through his Vaishnavi Maya towards the great goal. But Ganesha has the power of that Buddhi, that discerning intelligence. So without that, you can't go further. It's very important. It removes the obstacles on the way. So this first practice. Second practice is, of course, Nishkam Karma. So it cuts away the knot of desire, because what binds us is desire. And by practice of Nishkam Karma, means karma we have to do. So people try to take sannyas, we'll not do karma. So Shri Krishna has told us, nobody can be without karma. Even non-action is a choice you have made. And every choice is followed by consequences. So if I don't act, it is a choice. So action is inevitable. Even if I sit and do nothing, there is an action. And with that action follow consequences. But what we have to do is, we have to do action without an eye on the fruits. We have to do it well, because it's a worship to God. But it's not with the idea that I'll get this, I'll get that reward. So when we do an action, and he goes on to tell us that even so-called ritualistic action, worship of God, may be done by desire, with the principle of desire active. And Shri Krishna tells us, those who do it, they remain tied to the Trigunatmak Prakriti. Because if you pray to God and only to fulfill your desires, he will do that. But then we remain tied to the lower creation. We never arrive at liberation. We never arrive at union with the divine, which is the goal of the, actual goal of the practice. So this is the third part, that Nishkam Karma. But Nishkam Karma extends to all kinds of things. The other important practice that we read is that we have to, he gives just a passing hint that by these two practices you will arrive at a state of impersonality. But that's not enough. Offer it to me. He just passingly mentioned that we must depend upon the divine, we must give ourselves to the divine, very passingly. He'll elaborate that in great length. Now, last time we read in chapter 18, the signs of the divine worker. How are we going to know that somebody is actually engaged in the divine work? Not that we have to show it to anyone, but this is the, if we take it in a human sense, because Shubhendu does speak something in that vein, that when we take up a spiritual life or a spiritual path, and imagine every time we have to go from one level to another. Mother says you have to pass through a test. Now this test is nothing visible. It's not about big things. This test is interwoven in the fabric of life. She says that. He says when there are big things, we are very careful, but they are in the most seemingly insignificant things of life. And then she says that you have to pass through spiritual tests each time you have to go to the next level, but most people are keen only to bribe the examiner. Oh, I have, done this for you, please help me through. So these tests come in the most seemingly trivial ways, but they see whether we are ready or not for the greater life. So often people say, why should we have to go through all this? And both Sri Aurobindo and the mother explain that, well, because we are moving towards something which is tremendous, and if we are not ready, we will break down under the pressure. At one place, the mother says, "This it's not a sign of bhakti that we sing and dance and jump about. It's the sign of weak nerves. Bhakti may be there inside, and if you are not able to contain it, a yogi should be able to contain a whole avalanche of troubles. He should be able to engage in all kinds of actions. That's how the yogin has to be. So if we are not strong, if we are not ready, then we may suffer a breakdown when the divine forces act, because it's something very tremendous. So there is a long journey, a long passage. We should not grudge, because, well, we have chosen for that goal. So in that practice, now another key practice is, apart from, he says the signs are knowledge, the signs are inner peace and joy, the signs are impersonality, signs of a person is desirelessness. So that's where we are ticked. These are the subjects. Subjects are not that how many hours you did and what magnificent outer work we did. Say for example that divine is not seeing that you arranged a very good program for Ganpati festival or Saraswati puja or for something to do with mother's seminar and everybody went back happily. This is not the test. This is only the framework. The test is whether you did it with desire or not. Did you want to project yourself to be big person in somebody's eyes? Then you failed the test, even if you did something very, very outwardly, very ostentatious. So that's where desirelessness is the test. And how to know whether a person is desireless or not? It's by the state of inner peace and joy. If you truly are freed from desire, you'll be full of that inner peace and joy. And then another test is beyond the dualities and beyond the trigunas, trigunatit. So he is not bound. That's why it's so difficult. His action of a yogin is not governed by any of our standard ways of understanding things. So somebody living in rajas will always say, let's act, let's act, let's rush, let's do this. So that's because he's driven by rajas. It may be right or wrong, that's not the issue. Somebody who is governed by tamas will only say, hey, leave it, it's okay, that's how it is, life is like that, be indifferent. Somebody governed by sattvic will always bring in principles, idealism, that's how we must do, that's how we should not do. One humorous story comes to my mind when somebody was offering some, I forget the amount, probably 5,000 rupees to Sri Aurobindo, and he put in conditions. Please use it for the Gaushala and please use it for this, So they asked Sri Aurobindo whether we should accept it or not. Sri Aurobindo said, accept the check, reject the conditions. So that was his way. That you don't have to show that, see, I am being very idealistic. It's like you need that, like Yajnavalk going to Janak Sabha and he's saying, I take the cows. So people said, are you a Brahmagyani? No, I am not claiming that. But I need the cows for the ashram. As simple as that. So direct. So you're not acting under the impulsion of desire. And the sign is, if there is nothing, it's fine. It doesn't, it's not like you are running, hankering, craving. So you are not disturbed by that. So then comes this state of dvandatit, which is equality. Equality is necessary to break the backbone of the ego. Because ego is like a filter. So what does the ego do? Right from childhood, we develop a sense of self. That's what ego is. Now it's conditioning from society, from what I've learned, my habits, customs. It's a formation. It's a temporary structure. Now based on that, I judge people, situations, things. So I see some person and based on all my conditionings and associations and identification and habits, I react. Because this is my comfort zone. Ego makes comfort zones. So for instance, if I am living in a cold country and if I come to a hot country and I'm very much troubled, and that's why one of the things which passes unnoticed is that look at it, how mother would have lived here. See, she's come from France and she's come to an extremely tropical climate. She doesn't say a word about it. But just imagine, France, then she goes to Tokyo and Kyoto in Japan, another extreme other side, then she comes to France, to India, Pondicherry of all the places. Not once does she say, I think, can I go to Himalayas, can I just, you know, have a little fresh air in France. Doesn't. I mean, if nothing else, when I see this, I feel, here is the sign of a yogi of yogins. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't even write in her memoirs that it was so difficult to come to India. You know, because it's not easy. You know, everything is different. Smells are different. Tastes are different. Tendencies, habits, everything is different. But no word. So that is called equality. So we have these two words first, equality and equanimity. So equanimity is the calm state of mind, which is a result of practice of equality. Somebody who practices equality will automatically develop equanimity. Equanimity is an inner state. So that's a calm, tranquil mind which is undisturbed. So equanimity means a state of undisturbed mind. Equality is the practice, the attitudes we have to adopt towards people, events, circumstances, things to grow in equanimity. So equanimity is what we grow into when we practice equality. And this equality has to be practiced at three basic levels. So there is the level of physical world where there are changes, heat, cold, all kinds of weather changes, extreme climates, we go to different places, food changes, all these habits change. So we have to practice equality. Meaning thereby, if these things come, we don't have to get troubled. Of course, it doesn't mean that we mix khichdi and rasgulla and have it, no. But if we are given, I mean, khichdi is nice, not that. But if we are given khichdi, we accept it with joy, but gratitude. If we are given nice, elaborate meal, we accept it with joy and gratitude. We don't have this that, oh no, no, I am a pure vegan. I want only vegan diet. Or I am only this or that. I mean, nothing wrong in being a vegan. I'm just saying that all these conditionings, habits through which, lenses through which we, and sometimes we put everybody into discomfort because I have a certain kind of choice that I'll not eat certain plants which are grown below. There may be a logic to it. I'm not talking of that. But equality is that, well, these differences in the outward food situation, etc., if we have to grow into the greater being, then we have to be free from that. Then there is equality at the level of emotions. So at the level of emotions, it means naturally we have a preference for those who are our own. So we see how Arjun is deviating from equality. He is not able to do the dharma of the Kshatriya. Why? Because he says, these are my own people. How can I hurt them? How can I shoot arrows? So this is inequality. Why? Because he is favoring some. And it can go to extreme extents. For instance, if you speak in the language you have grown up with, you know, if you say in Bengali, Kemon acho, oh, he is my. So you allow an excess. Whereas if you speak in some other languages, you don't feel connected. Now these are all signs of inequality. Dress sense, all these, our emotions, our life impulse, it reacts and it's woven in the fabric of ego. And then there is equality in the mind, where there may be contrary ideas. Now when somebody is a contrary idea, he becomes my enemy, I begin to hate him. Now I have to act according to my truth, but that doesn't mean I have to bring in hatred, I have to bring in all these reactions. He has his own limitations, he has his own thinking, and he has a right to think the way he is thinking. So that's how free speech and your action, they get reconciled. It doesn't mean that equality doesn't mean that I just let things happen the way they are happening. That is indifference. So there are many shades of equality which Aurobindo, like a divine surgeon, shows us that look here, this is mistaken for equality. So that first thing which he says is mistaken for equality is tamasic indifference. Tamasic indifference is recoil, jugupsa. I don't want to get into this. It's fight, it's quarrel, it lead to disharmony. I better not get into it. You know how Sahana Devi had asked Aurobindo, should I or should I not? And he gave a very beautiful answer. That not reacting is one part, but the Gita says you have to take a stand. Now this becomes very difficult for human mind, because it tamasic recoil is, I just want to be in my comfort zone. Why should I trouble myself? So he is a man who is recoiling from action. Rajasic equality is, I'll bear all the contacts. So there is something still greater in it. It says, okay, maybe if I take this action, take this stand, people will try to hurt me, they may try to insult me, they may do what they do, but I'll bear all this because I want to master the contacts of nature. It's the heroic soul's equality. And then there is the mental equality, which is philosophical equality practiced by the sage. So sage says, well, that's how life is. He's not recoiling, but he says that the nature of life, human beings fight. That's the end of the story. I have nothing to do with it. And then there is the equality of the Christian resignation. This is a term Aurobindo says. It's acceptance of, this is the will of God, it's okay. These are practices, but Sri Krishna takes us to the deeper equality. That is the equality of the soul. Because otherwise, I may be indifferent to whatever is going around, but I don't progress. That's what Aurobindo said when he was asked that, I believe those who are near to you will be the ones who will first get the supermind. He said, in that case, this this my table, that piece of wood on my table, that will be the first one. He was pointed out. This tamasic indifference, jugupsa, shrinking from battle, shrinking from life, this doesn't lead us anywhere. And sometimes this tamasic may be mixed with rajasic. Meaning thereby I am disappointed. I tried, but see what is the use. So again, rajo tamasik, but with a strong strain of tamas. So he says this usually doesn't help. Though sometimes this can be taken up by the master and turned into something very powerful. Like in the case of Arjun. Arjun is also recoiling in a state of tamorajasik. There are people who form this idea, human beings are bad. No, human relationships end up badly, so I'll not talk to anyone. These are all tamasic ways. It doesn't help much. The second part could be primarily rajasic. I'll bear the contacts of life, I'll endure. This is better. Why? Because I want to master. But this also will not lead. In fact, even this can lead to a tremendous kind of egoism, where one says, see, I have borne so many wounds and I have not flinched. It's great, no doubt about it. So all these are steps of the ascent. We have to pass through. We can't suddenly from tamas say, I want to be equal. A tamasic man must cultivate this rajasic attitude of conquest, of battling with the forces of creation. And then there is the sattvic. This here again, if I just assume this attitude, that's how life is, it doesn't help me. But the deeper spiritual equality comes from this idea that I have to realize that great goal, become one with the divine. And then he may take it that till I have achieved that goal, these things may end up distracting me. I am seeking these pleasures which are going to be endless. So there is a philosophical aspect, but he's turning it into something deeper. A pure philosopher will say, well, that's the nature of life, end of story. But the seeker after God will say, that's the nature of life, but there is something greater and higher. towards which I am going, so I should not get so much involved into these things because there is something much greater. After I realize the divine, I'll see what next is to be done. So this is the background of this chapter. It's a very beautiful practice, fundamental practice in fact. And people often say these are difficult things. This is difficult. No practice is easy. And rather, Sri Aurobindo at one place says something very interesting. Like another thing which he has brought in is of sacrifice, that yajna. So he says that, well, people often say it is all difficult. He says, yes, but straining after desire to achieve something you desire is also very difficult. Try doing it. Often give this example that as it just to complete my MBBS plus MD, leave aside a few years in between mandatory service in Air Force. So by the time I completed it from 60, 28, 29 years. Okay, this whole education process. Now I have the stamp to write all kinds of things. So look at it, 29 years. But if that time, of course this is a process as I said, half the time you can realize the divine. So people, it just because we somewhere habitually bound by this idea, no, this is comfortable because we are used to it. So when we are told that, you know, we have to practice equanimity, one says, oh, that means I have to leave Rasgulla, I have to leave my tea, I have to leave my favorite hot spot. But we don't know, it is not a question of leaving it, because we will begin to live in that felicity and delight of the divine. When Rasgulla will taste 100 times sweeter, when and the absence of Rasgulla will not trouble us, because we are in that state of inner felicity. So that's what he says, that this is the practice. And it means every time the mind habitually rushes to react in a certain way, the body rushes to react within a certain way, the will has to step back and say, no, your goal is there. Why are you getting distracted? This is not your goal. To remind yourself. That's why one of the practices that the Upanishad gives is Smriti. Even the Gita says Smriti Labdha. He regained the memory. It also says Smriti Nasha. When we are angry, we lose the memory of the self. Who am I? Later on we repent. So that Smriti, that well, there is something greater, higher. Remember and offer. So that we don't get too much. It doesn't happen in one go, but at least we remember it. So with this we enter into chapter 19, equality. So equality is necessary in Karma Yoga, especially because we have to act with the world. The typical Gyan Yogi doesn't need it. He is absorbed in finding the divine inside. He cuts away his relation with the world. He takes sannyas. He doesn't need equality. The Bhakta doesn't need to practice equality. For him is God within and in his temple is enough. But the Karma Yogin and the Integral Yogin have no choice. We have to have equality because the divine action cannot pour through an unequal state. It will always be deviated, deflected. It will be deviated towards egoistic ends. Like there was this person who was asked to collect money for Sri Aurobindo. Or perhaps he himself declared that I am collecting money for sure. Lot of people gave him. Why? Because, you know, it was known that Sri Aurobindo would give him long interviews. So people knew this. This word had spread and he himself said, 45 minutes I spent with him. Oh my God. Those were not the days of picture. That see, I am known to this prime minister or president. So people gave him money and he ran away. He was a scoundrel. So people asked Sri Aurobindo, he said, but why did you give him? I have not authorized him. He says, no, but we thought that because you have spent 45 minutes, he must be someone very special. He says, don't you know that even asuras are special to the divine? And some of the great disciples are great asuras. Shubhendu's words. He said, how have you drawn this conclusion? See, this is how the unequal mind goes into disturbance. Oh, mother smiled to someone longer. Oh, mother touched a little longer time. She gave less time to me. Maybe she is angry with me. All these come because there is inequality. There are preferences, the lack of surrender. So, Shobindo at pains. But what equality is classic example is Shobindo waiting for his meal. Mother brings it. Today we were eating it. She brings the meal and she is with the knife. She is going to probably slice the bread. And she used to go often in trance and we don't know when it will. So she has gone into trance with the knife and the hand hanging. This is a very common thing. It used to happen. And Shobindo is sitting quietly like a child. Then he is smiling. Sometimes he would do a little. That's it. And we don't know when she will come back. Suddenly she'll come. Oh, I got. Then she will quickly. And he is just smiling. Once he went with a lot of papers, letters to be signed. And suddenly she walked in the trance in the room. And when she kept the paper, she was gone. And Shobindo is sitting. After a long time, she comes back. He says, oh, I suppose we have to rush through. And Shobindo says, I think we have spent already a lot of time very gently. Like a child, undisturbed. He is not asking anything, not saying anything. This is equality. So Krishna in the Gita, page 189. Says that none is dear to him, none hated, to all he is equal in spirit, yet is the God lover, the special receiver of his grace. Now here why equality is needed? So that we can direct, the divine can direct his powers in the right way toward the right sources. Otherwise what I'll do? I'll receive all the precious things that I have received from Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Whom will I give it? To those who are emotionally connected with me. That's not how they are meant to be done. People do this simply because they are receiving from the divine. We are like trustees. They are meant for the divine work. But that's how, and so many do it. So this because of the inequality. So Sri Krishna, what is his basis? That the devotee is dear to him. He's not saying, you know, ultimately my son and my... In fact, his own grandson or his own son becomes the cause for the finishing of the Yadav dynasty, Samb. And he doesn't spare him. Oh, bichara, ladke log hain, but boys are boys, no. So that's where he says, devotee is dear to me. But he hates nobody. It is not like he will not receive the sinner. He will receive, give to all an equal hearing, act there. But the devotee will be a special recipient of his grace. Because the relation he has created is different and the one impartial Lord of all yet meets each soul according to its way of approach to him. So equality doesn't mean that everybody, like the flattening of death. Equality gives us the right perspective. Because people have a different temperament. It doesn't tell everybody a standardized formula that wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and do this sadhana. There are people who just can't do it and they will end up simply not doing anything. To somebody he would say that all right, whenever you wake up, remember God. Somebody he would say, there was a gentleman who came to ashram and used to be doing nothing except eating, dining room of course, and being happy, no work. So someone who liked him very much and was very inspired by him, because of his interaction, this man had come to the ashram. So he was telling me, he said, one day I asked him, I am watching you for 3 years. You seem to do nothing. You are just happy, you are just eating, sleeping. What kind of sadhana you are doing? This is not sadhana. So this man laughed and said, now you will tell me sadhana, should I do your will or the Lord's will? He said, what do you mean? He said, I asked your window what I have to do. He said, you eat, you rest, you sleep, you take my name. I am doing that. I am following the Lord's instructions. Now, should I follow his instruction or should I follow your instruction? See, no standard formula. Chote Narayan ji, he used to tell me. He said when he came to the ashram, he asked the mother what work I should do, because everybody does work in the ashram. So through Nalnida, the message went, and mother sent a message through Nalnida. Tell Chote Narayan, he is speaking, reading, writing on Sri Aurobindo. Tell him to just continue it. That's all. Chote Narayan ji had no official work in any ashram department. His work was to speak, to write on Mother Sri Aurobindo, to read. And he himself told me this story. But to somebody else, it's a different story. So when we are in an equal state, we can see the divine will in that person and we can act according to that prompting. Otherwise, we deviate. Next passage. Equality is the sign and also for the aspirant, the test. Because if there is no equality, there is the desired self. Next page. By his equality, the Karma Yogi knows in the midst of his action that he is free. Then we have those different methods. One of them, Sri Aurobindo used the word udaseen. Udaseen is that indifferent, high intellectual indifference. It doesn't matter what he is. Then there is titiksha. Titiksha is where you face the contacts of life without flinching. You endure the wounds without flinching. You see that high equality of the warrior in Abhimanyu. He is receiving so many wounds. He is not flinching in courage, valor or anything. He is facing it all, enduring it all. He doesn't have that goal of uniting with the divine. But he is facing all this with an equal soul. Titiksha, Udasinta, and the third is Nati. Nati or Namas is whatever God has planned for me, I accept it. So these are the three basic practices of equality. One can use any of them depending on temperament or all the three. So, okay. So we'll come to next page, 192. He also says very interestingly that actually, say the warrior who feels, endures the wounds, actually has a delight in all this. So actually when we practice equality, even at these levels, we begin to experience delight. For instance, somebody accepts things that, well, I receive it as God's will. See the difference. When you don't receive it as God's will, you are tormented. You are complaining. You are constantly saying, Mother, why have you done this to me? First of all, she has not done. Let's not blame her for the things we have called upon ourselves. We mess our lives and then we tell, Mother, why have you done it to me? Anyways, so when we complain, we further close the doors to grace. That's because we have shut ourselves. At the same time when we are doing this, then we are constantly in a state of torment. Why? Because she is our hope. And when you say, why have you done this to me? It's like, I have no hope. Whereas when we accept things that, well, whatever it is, I accept it as your will. Then the grace will act. Grace will anyways act. It will, but we won't be able to receive it. And pull us through all this. Whatever be the passage required because of the karmic whole chain. But it will eventually pull us out. So equality is even otherwise the best, most logical and practically also from that point of view, an important thing. And then immediately we have peace. Well, I accept it, Mother, it's your will. Now she has to handle it. I have told her that, well, Mother, it's whatever you have planned for me, I accept it. So now what happens? She has to handle it because all the consequences, all the problems, she will handle and take us through it all. So that's why it is important. So why we don't do it? Page 192, Sri Aurobindo says somewhere in the middle, It feels that the effort would be too difficult for it. It recoils from the struggle of the ascent, although in reality the spiritual change is not at all more difficult than the realization of the dreams of the desired soul pursues. It's so true. And even if you achieve what you have pursued, at the end you realize it was like holding sunlight in the middle of your palm and closing the fingers. It has slipped away. But by then so much time has gone. So he says, actually it is not so difficult because we are supported, assisted, helped, and very soon we begin to experience that joy. That's why Shubindo says that to the worldly minded person, life is sweet in the beginning, but bitter as the draught becomes more and more empty. But to the God-minded, it is bitter in the beginning, but as we sip it more and more, it begins to become sweeter and sweeter. That's the difference between wine and divine. So this is how he describes. But most people don't look at it like that. Nor entails more struggle and labor in the attainment than the tremendous effort which the desired soul expends in its passionate chase after its own transient objects of pleasure and desire. This is so true. People do all kinds of things day and night in the end to get something which they realize was not worth it. Divine does not ask us to make that kind of effort. All that he says, remember me. As Shubhita says, time to time, breathe your prayer, sit quietly, aspire, seek the divine, ask for his grace, such beautiful things. He's not saying you must undertake this journey, you must, you know, throw away all your money, you must deliberately sleep on a bed of nails. None of this he's saying. All that he's saying is if you get a nice bed, take it with gratitude, but one day if you, or any day, number of days, if you have to sleep on the floor, be grateful for that also. That's all he's saying. So he's telling us that even from practical point of view, the true cause of its unwillingness is that it is asked to rise above its own atmosphere and breathe a rarer and purer air of life, whose bliss and power it cannot realize and hardly even conceives as real. While the joy of this lower turbid nature is to it the one thing familiar and palpable. A classic physical image is when we go to snows. People go undertake all the way the journey to the snowy mountains. And you know, till you have touched that those barren peaks, for example, I can give that direct example of Ladakh. So you feel what will be there because you are seeing greenery all around. These mountains are barren. They have no vegetation beyond a point. So I have actually stayed in that region, even gone there. So initially you go with this idea, where am I going to this place? And then you get addicted to it. That beauty of barrenness, that, and when you climb to the snowy peaks, it's like unimaginable. There are no colors. White, signless purity and the joy you feel because all other kinds of disturbances are gone. Of course, human mind will say, but my mobile is not working, signal is not coming. But after coming from that, it takes time to enjoy this play of colors. So this is just an example that we are not accustomed to breathe that air. And just at the physical level we can. Or vast stretches of sand. There's a prayer of the mother. Why people used to withdraw? Vast stretches of sand. There's nothing, no contour. And yet the deep silence and peace which can come inside. So, this is, we are not used to it. That's why we. But if we rest eternally. Okay, a few lines after that. Nor is this lower satisfaction in itself a thing evil and unprofitable. Shubhita is not saying running after these transient things is evil. It is rather the condition for the upward evolution of a human nature out of the tamasic ignorance and inertia to which its material being is most subject. It is the rajasic stage of the graded ascent of man toward the supreme self-knowledge, power and bliss. So from tamas you need this. Run after these pleasures. If you say after God, tamasic man will say, wonderful. I will join the ashram, rest content, everything is provided for. But no inner effort. So rajas is required. Running after this world, chasing the flowers that are scentless. So that's how it is required. Then we appreciate the real flower. But if we rest eternally on this plane, the Madhyama Gati of the Gita, our ascent remains unfinished, the evolution of the soul incomplete. So that's what he is explaining to us, not because evil, bad, but simply because if you do it all the time and ultimately you will miss the real, something much higher that is planned for you. Then of course, page 193, somewhere in the middle, the beginning of equality may be sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. And we have already spoken about it. It may be purely tamasic, the heavy equability of a vital temperament rendered inertly responsive to the shocks of existence by sort of dull insensibility and desirous of the joy of life. This one kind of equality. There is no joy of life. So you don't react to anything. Now that Sophocles face, tragic face, is not the height of spiritual well-being, because it's ananda towards which we are going. But tamasic is like that. Old time, if you go still, I don't know how Bihar is now. Bihar, Assam, you'll find it, used to find it. See, you ask in the afternoon any person, hey, the man is happy with his mach bhat. In Bihar, you get down on the station, it used to be, if by misfortune your train has come at 1 o'clock, you tell bhaiya, take me to home. He is sitting in the riksha, but he'll say no. Why? Because he is want to enjoy his siesta. And you go to Punjab, you will see out of the way he'll come. Chalo sahab, that rajas. Here there'll be tamas. He is just not willing. He has to be in his comfort zone. And then people remain poor, and then politicians use them. But that's a different story. So that sattva should be encountered by rajas, conquered by rajas, and rajas by the sattva. And that he explains. But okay. So all of these can be starting points. And one of them, Sri Aurobindo beautifully brings out, is the Gita, however, page 194. The Gita, however, admits and makes room for this movement, which is renunciation of desire completely and withdrawing from the world. It allows as a recoiling starting point the perception of the defects of the world existence. Even sattvic person sees birth and disease and death and old age and sorrow. The historic starting point of the Buddha. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanudarshanam. You see this world and you say, again, Sri Krishna also says at one place, anityam asukham lokam imam lokam prapya bhajasvamam. This transient suffering world. It can be a starting point. But a greater is, thus is the world, this must be conquered. That's the second level already. So, then the soul by its recoil comes to a greater condition of being, lifted beyond the three gunas and free from birth and death and age and grief, and enjoys the immortality of its self-existence. Janma mrityu jara dukher vimukto amritam ashnute. The tamasic unwillingness to accept the pain and effort of life is indeed by itself a weakening and degrading thing. And in this lies the danger of preaching to all alike the gospel of asceticism and world disgust. That it puts the stamp of a tamasic weakness and shrinking on unfit souls, confuses their understanding, buddhi bhedam janayet, diminishes the sustained aspiration, the confidence in living, the power of effort which the soul of man needs for its salutary, its necessary rajasic struggle to master its environment without really opening to it, for it is yet incapable of that, a higher goal, a greater endeavor, a mightier victory. So if you look at India's glorious past, you see these two ages, three ages rather. One is Vikramaditya, the age of Kalidas. That time it's wonderful. Then you see Chandragupta Maurya, it's actually regarded as the golden age. Then you see King Ashoka, the conqueror. But see what happened to King Ashoka and Chandragupta Maurya. Chandragupta Maurya accepted Buddhism. And Ashoka also accepted Buddhism. And see how that down these mighty kings, warriors. And slowly, because of their deeds, though great beings, you see later on all the armies march. Because it weakened the whole impulse of the race. People started running away from life. So while it may be okay for a Buddha to walk into the forest because he is moved by the... Buddha is a master, heroic soul who conquered desire and ego. But Buddhism as it is practiced, countless people accept it, adopt it. And they may take it as a way of escape from the challenges of life. So this is where the danger lies. That it creates a buddhi bhed. It confuses and bewilders the intelligence. So Sri Krishna cautions us. So page 195, the real movement, the real discipline begins with the movement to mastery over these things which we were first inclined merely to flee. It is here that the possibility of a kind of rajasic equality comes in, which is at its lowest the strong nature's pride in self-mastery, self-control, superiority to passion and weakness. But the Stoic ideal seizes upon this point of departure and makes it the key to an entire liberation of the soul from subjection to all weakness of the lower nature. So this he goes on, and then he speaks of the philosophical equality. The equality of the sage, where all desires enter into the soul as waters into the sea, and yet it has to remain immobile. So the sage is not disturbed as desires enter. He does not act and react upon them. But we'll come to that point where all these are practices, but what is the true equality? The deeper equality which Sri Krishna is speaking of. Okay, so page 197. Now he talks about the philosopher, the thinker, and then he'll go on to the deeper. The pure philosopher, the thinker, the born sage, not only relies upon the sattvic principle in him as his ultimate justification, but uses it from the beginning as his instrument of self-mastery. He starts from the sattvic equality. Sattvic equality is that, well, this is the nature of life. Why run after material pleasures? See, he starts from that because that's how his mind is. So now, interesting, this doesn't automatically mean he is spiritual. He has realized the transient nature of life. It doesn't necessarily mean that he is engaged in a higher effort or a deeper effort. He observes all with an eye of tranquil discernment and makes his choice without repulsion or perplexity. The enjoyments born of the touches of things, we have turned the page, are causes of sorrow. They have a beginning and an end. Therefore the sage, the main man of awakened understanding, Buddha, does not place his delight in these. The self in him is unattached to the touches of external things. He finds his happiness in himself. He sees, as the Gita puts it, that he is himself his own enemy and his own friend. Atmanev atmano bandhu atmanev ripuratmana. So he says, see, it's nobody's problem. If I run after these things, it will end up in suffering. Because either I will lose them, or if I have it, I will lose the rasa in them, or today or tomorrow a transient thing is going to go away. So eventually it will lead me to pain and suffering. So why run after them? Thus the sage remains fixed in his intelligence. It is still sattvic equality. He becomes satisfied with knowledge, master of his senses, a yogin by sattvic equality. So he can go very far. So far as, for equality is yoga, samatvam yoga uchyate, regarding alike cloud and stone and gold, samalost kanchana. Tranquil and self-poised in heat and cold. Shitoshna sukhdukeshu ani labho jayajayo. Suffering and happiness, honor and disgrace. He is equal in soul to friend and enemy and to neutral and indifferent. Because he sees that these are transitory relations born of the changing conditions of life. Even by the pretensions of learning, panditaha, and purity and virtue. So panditaha gava hastini. He is equal to, if he sees pandit and a cow and a elephant. Yeah, these are all equal. It's just a question of degree. Ultimately, pandit's learning, this is also a transient thing. So in one stroke, this is what is called as cutting the Gordian knot. But if you cut the Gordian knot, if you don't open it, you don't solve the riddle of life. You have bypassed it. So, this is a good practice, but it is not the ultimate. He is equal soul to all men, to the sinner and the saint, to the virtuous, learned and the cultured Brahmin and the fallen outcast. All these are the Gita's descriptions of the sattvic equality. And they sum up well enough what is familiar to the world as the calm philosophic equality of the sage. This is such a beautiful chapter because when we read just the Gita, this distinction doesn't come through. It seems that this is what is equality. Samalosht kanchana, pandit gava hastini. So you have to be just equal. That's how it seems. If you are able to do it, that means you are already into yoga. And while these things have their place, Gita is not denying it. They can be initial practice. They can give us a certain degree of release within. But this is, there is still something left. And that's what Gita points out. Where then is the difference between this and the larger equality taught by the Gita? And again we come to that is why Essays on the Gita is an upgraded version of the Gita. I have seen, heard so many commentaries, seen, read them. They don't bring out these distinctions. And you end up believing you have to just do this practice and that's the end of the story. But there is a difference. And Shurvinda brings out. It lies in the difference between the intellectual and philosophical discernment and the spiritual. The Vedantic knowledge of unity on which the Gita founds its teaching. The philosopher maintains his equality by the power of the buddhi, the discerning mind. But even that by itself is a doubtful foundation. People often ask why Yudhishthir, who is a dharmanist person, he is very sattvic. Everything must be according to the checklist. Now imagine when you do that and why he gets disturbed. He does certain things which are just unimaginable, like the game of dice. He begins to lose. And he had not come expecting that. So suddenly losing and like a fool, literally a fool, he is putting one after another things on the stake, including his wife, his brothers, on whom he has no right, including even the kingdom. He had no right because he is just a trustee. He is not supposed. See, there's the difference between a philosophical sattvic equality and the spiritual. If he was rooted in spirituality, he would say, how can I put the kingdom on stake? It is not mine. He would have been saved. He doesn't do that. Because all dharma shastras will say, yes, you. He can at the most say, I am ready. Like Harishchandra says, I can sell myself. That's it. But he doesn't sell his wife. She has to look for a job somewhere and she does it. That's a different story. He says, I can put myself because this is within my limits and jurisdiction. But Yudhishthira makes a mistake because the foundation of sattvic equality can make a mistake here. So he says it's a doubtful foundation. For though master of himself on the whole by a constant attention or an acquired habit of mind, in reality he is not free from his lower nature. And it does actually assert itself in many ways and may at any moment take a violent revenge for its rejection and suppression. So when he goes to the one, he is very unhappy. He realizes what a big mistake I have done, blunder. Now he is filled with guilt. But thanks to his guilt, we have the story of Savitri. Because he goes to Rishi Markandeya and says, has anybody suffered like Draupadi? Such a good princess. She has been so good in every way. But she has suffered. Do you know anybody, O sage, who has suffered like her and has been as good as her? He says, yes, I know one. In far back times, there was one who not only suffered, but conquered. And then the story of Savitri rolls out. So that is the difference. See, again we see, Savitri's mastery is very different. It's a spiritual mastery. That's why repeatedly in Savitri she says, you think that it just because it's my Satyavan that I am running after? No. My love is not a hunger of the heart. My love is not a craving of the flesh. She clarifies. He says, it's not based on anything of this kind. It's the will of God and we are wedded together for a greater work. For that I claim Satyavan. Otherwise I can also walk with him. That's not the issue. So that is the difference between that Sattvic equality. Sattvic equality will say Satyavan is gone. He never was mine. All is transient in this transient world. Sattvic equality will tell Rama, it's okay. Janaki has gone. Sattvic equality will tell Krishna, see Yudhishthir, I think you shouldn't fight. It's not a good thing. And fight after what? After a kingdom? Perishable stuff? Whatever happened has been good. Nati. You read, no? Submission of the resignation to God's will. Okay, so that's how destiny has given me. He would tell Yudhishthir, it's okay, you have good in-laws, both Drupad and, Panchal Desh and now Virat also. So both of you can settle down here. Maybe you can take a few. What do you need? You just need a bed to sleep. Food is also available in plenty. Kichak is gone. You will inherit the kingdom. That's how he could have done. But he says no. That is the difference. But spiritual equality helps us to tune into the divine will and manifest that. And that's what he brings out at the end. Last line on this page is, even the mind of the wise man who labors for perfection is carried away by the vehement insistence of the senses. So we see even the sages suffering some kind of a fall. Perfect security can only be had by resorting to something higher than the sattvic quality. So we had this example of somebody who was in ashram and went away after 40 years. And Nirota is asking, sir, even he went away. He said, what do you mean that he went away? He said, he was so calm, so controlled. He says, yes, it was a mental control. Now you see the difference. Mental control gave in one day and he went away. But who stayed? Those who were captured by the love of the mother. See the difference. Mental control for its own sake, for its own joy, that I see I have mastered my nature. You even begin to look down upon others condescendingly. See, I have such a mastery, this man is running after objects of the senses. And even he may even create buddhi bhed by telling others you should have bairagya. That's what Shri Krishna is cautioning us. Don't do that. Let them enjoy their piece of cheese and rasgulla. Time will come for each one. But only sattvic control doesn't help. And this is an actual story. I mean, this real correspondence. So, Shobindo says, all must be consummated by a divine birth into the higher spiritual nature. Page 199, the last paragraph. And the philosopher's equalities, like the Stoics, like the world fleeing ascetics, inwardly a lonely freedom, remote and aloof from men. Such people who pursue it, they begin to become remote, aloof. They remain in their own little world. It is helpful to each his own way. But this is not what Gita is speaking about. At least not as the final. This can be a stage. But what is the final? But the man born to the divine birth, now comes the true basis of equality, has found the divine not only in himself but in all beings. He has realized his unity with all and his equality is therefore full of sympathy and oneness. He sees all as himself and is not intent on his lonely salvation. That's why lonely salvation is considered as a sattvic illusion. Mother speaks about it as an illusion, and Shobindu uses the word sattvic illusion, that this world is transient suffering. And therefore we must seek inner freedom, liberation. And you can find it through that persistent practice, but that's an illusion. Last illusion that one has to slay. So the equality is not a even a sattvic illusion, but something deeper. He sees all as himself. He even takes upon himself the burden of their happiness and sorrow, by which he is not himself affected or subjected. Not because it is his problem. You know, people say, is it your problem? No, it's not my problem personally. But it's the problem of creation. How can one rest content? Why is it bothering you? Of course, I am part of this creation. I have chosen to be here. So I should be concerned. This is my work. But you won't get success. Doesn't matter. So you see that rajasic success or failure. I must do the bit purpose that God has put into my heart. Whether I succeed or fail, whether I am a victor or I am defeated, whether all is snatched away from me or a whole kingdom passes into my charge, in both situations I should be equal. But there is neither a jugupsa, nor a rajasic possessiveness, nor a sattvic aloofness, but the fulfillment of the divine will. The perfect sage, the Gita, more than once repeats, is ever engaged. Now, who is a true sage here? Is ever engaged with a large equality in doing good to all creatures and makes that his occupation and delight. Sarva bhuta hite ratha. How do you recognize a man who is in true equality? He is not just saying all this is transient things. He is ever engaged in doing good to all. Because he sees God in all. He is one in sympathy with all. The perfect yogin, very powerful with this instrument. The perfect yogin is no solitary musing on the self in his ivory tower of spiritual isolation. Very powerful sentence. But yukta krishna karmakrat. It's like all kinds of actions. A many-sided universal worker for the good of the world, for God in the world. For he is a bhakta, a lover and devotee of the divine, as well as a sage and a yogin. A lover who loves God wherever he finds him. Oh. And who finds him everywhere. Why will he shrink? Where will he run away? From whom? All contacts will bring to him the contact of the divine. Whatever he is doing, wherever he is doing. They are all parts of his universal service to the beloved. He does not disdain to serve. Nor does action carry him away from the bliss of union, since all his acts proceed from the one in him, and to the one in all they are directed. The equality of the Gita is a large synthetic equality in which all is lifted up into the integrality of the divine being and the divine nature. So to summarize, there are practices of equality, imitations of equality, semblances of equality, which have their own utility as we grow. But the true equality is rooted in the spiritual foundation of our being, where God is the goal for which we are practicing. And when we have found God, God is the one for whom we are engaged in ever serving him in countless ways in the world. So this is the true foundation, because without this foundation of inner freedom and inner equality rooted in the divine, one cannot really engage in divine work. So when in Auroville Charter, one of them is there, no? Who is Karma Yoga, willing servitor of the divine. There was somebody who was, he said, no, see, you don't need to do yoga to be in Auroville. I said, oh, is it? You have to just follow the charter. I said, excellent. So what does the charter say? One of them is willing servitor of the divine. Please read the Gita. After that, you come back, we'll discuss what it means to be a willing servitor of the divine. This is to be a willing servitor of the divine. Just this practice itself is so difficult. But because it is difficult, it should be done. Especially because such is the aim we have taken. Okay, namaste.